We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 228. We're recording after the Yankees just finished the sweep of the Angels. It was a home series this weekend. What a joke those Angels fans are.
I tweeted from Bronx Pinstripes. I said the dirt tonight was as soft as the fans are. And this because everybody was falling all over the place because of the freaking dirt. I don't know what was going on there. But the fans, not the fans in Anaheim. That's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Angels fans in L.A. and Anaheim, wherever the hell they are. An absolute embarrassment. Embarrassment of a weekend. If I'm an Angels fan, I really have to look myself in the mirror and say, what in the hell just happened? Because that place was filled with Yankees fans. It was loud from the Yankees fans. Didi got a friggin' curtain call. It was embarrassing. The whole thing was embarrassing for them. I loved it. I loved every second of it. No longer do I fear going to Anaheim. I mean, it's been a long time, but
ooh, it's been bad for the Yankees in Anaheim for many,
not
many
recently.
Years.
Not now. Not after what I just saw. It is done.
Well, they just had their first sweep of the Angels in Anaheim since 03, so it's been a long-ass time.
Well, you know what? After what transpired this weekend in that three-game series and the amount of Yankees fans that were in that building, there's no longer to be even wary of that place. It's like you said, in people all over Twitter and everything, it's Yankee Stadium West. That place was packed with Yankees fans.
Oh, I would say it was well over 60%.
It was crazy. I've never seen anything like it. It was worse than Baltimore. I mean, back in the day, you go to Baltimore when Baltimore was even like kind of good, and more Yankees fans would show up at that point too, and that place would be Yankee Stadium South.
Well, you understand it was worse that's a 2.5 hour train ride away.
That's what I'm saying.
All these
and
fans
it was more packed
California,
than Baltimore. But, it was right. more packed. It
well,
was
these
crazy.
Are just this. See, what we're seeing is all the Yankees fans coming out of the woodwork because the Yankees fans didn't want to show up in 2013 when the Yankees were in Anaheim, but now this team is exciting. They saw what they did in the playoffs last year. So yeah, you got your diehards that are going to go, but now you got all the fair weather fans living across the country, sporting their new Yankees gear. Let's go watch Judge. Let's go watch Stanton. Let's go watch Didi. That's what's happening.
Yeah, there's some of that. I mean, I understand that. There's some of that. And I think Aaron Judge brings a lot of people to the ballpark by himself.
Yeah.
And then you start adding Stanton and now what Didi's doing and what Gary Sanchez is doing and Aroldis Chapman. Like, you have a plethora of superstars on this team. So there's a lot to be excited about. And if you are a casual fan and you're living outside New York, then this is, you know, one of the only opportunities you're able to see this team. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. They put butts in seats. There's no doubt.
You know, do you remember on the broadcast, I believe it was Friday, Michael Kay was talking about how the Angels have actually a below 500 record at home, but they're above 500 on the road so far? I think we saw why this weekend.
Now we know why. They hate their own fans.
And if I'm Mike Trout, don't you have to like kind of come out and say something? Like after Didi Gregorius gets a friggin' curtain call on the road, I've never seen that before. He got that is Didi Gregorius taking his big old balls and putting them right on the table in front of Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. How do you not, if you're Mike Trout in the post-game press conference, at least throw a little jab at the fans?
Because Mike Trout doesn't do that. That's not him at all. He doesn't talk about anything. He barely talks. It's just, this is why he's, you know, happy out there, because he doesn't talk. He doesn't like the attention for that. I mean, I don't even know. He's from Jersey, and I barely know anything about him because he's playing in California.
It's sad.
You know, it is sad because he's being, you know, maybe that's his own personality and he likes it. Like Ohtani. That's why Ohtani wanted to go there, right? He's a little fisher boy from a little fisherman's town in Japan. I just want to go to a stadium that doesn't give a shit. Maybe that's why he wanted to go. He actually did want to play for the Yankees, but just didn't want to play for the Yankees in New York. He wanted to play for the Yankee fans in LA.
Right. It all works out. Yeah. I was a little upset that Ohtani had the little boo-boo on his ankle and wasn't able to face Tanaka. Not that it would have been that much of a heated at-bat considering the Yankees had a 10-run lead in the second inning on Saturday night.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get all of that now when they come for the end of May series. So that'll be fun. The May 26th the game, which we'll mention at the end, but that's our game event for 26. Hopefully Ohtani's pitching, at least batting for the love of God. But you know, if I'm the Angels, I'm walking into that series, right? Like we're going to work our asses off harder than we've ever worked to hand it to the Yankees at their house. if I'm an Angels player, that's my mentality at that point, right? I mean, they embarrassed you at home. So it should be a contested series for sure.
It's crazy. The Yankees are 18-9 now. They've won 9 in a row. They have the second best record in the American League behind only the Red Sox. They're 2 games in back of the Red Sox right now, who have kind of struggled this last week. So that's how they made up all that ground. But isn't it insane to think that many people were saying the Yankees got off to a bad start, quote unquote bad start, and they right now at the end of April have the second best record in the league?
Well, they did at that point. It was a bad start, but the thing is that everybody had all these expectations in their
exactly.
head that they were going to go, you know, balls to the wall from the very beginning, from the jump, and it just didn't work out that way. I still believe that there were other circumstances happening with weather and off days and all these other things that were playing into what was going on the field. But, you know, obviously they found their groove now, and a huge stretch coming up. I mean, we've had a good stretch so far, but now it's just you double down. You go 4 in Houston, then Cleveland. It's a huge set coming up early in the season. And the Red Sox are right after that. So a lot of big games coming up.
Well, the good news is it seems like the Yankees are playing up to the competition. Like we saw them looking lethargic and just downright bad against teams like Miami and Baltimore. Teams like Baltimore's trash this year. Have they won a game yet since they left the Bronx? I don't know. It's crazy how bad they've been. And the Yankees were playing equally as bad as them back in those series. And then they've been on a roll against some better competition.
You know, I don't know how many times he's pitched since this, but the last time I heard, Chris Tillman, who they re-signed on a year deal, by the way, re-signed. The guy was not even under contract, and they brought him back in. They're like, oh, that's a good idea. Let's bring you back in. Hadn't won a game in his last, like, 20 to 23 starts, whatever the number is, and maybe it's still going. But yeah, this is a major league pitcher who hadn't won a start in 20-plus appearances. That's insane. Why are you still in the major leagues? Why are you being brought back?
There's got to be.
The Orioles are a joke.
There's got to be somebody better in their system that they can call up, right?
20 games. I could throw and lose 20 games in a row easily.
Yeah, yes, easily. You could. yes, you could. And maybe with the Yankees lineup, you might get a win out of it.
I mean, it would be a different look for them, for sure, for the other team.
They're winning. The thing that I've loved about this win streak is we've seen them win in a bunch of different ways. Like, just look at this Angels series. Friday night, they get the clutch runs on sac flies, and then Didi gets the home run in extra innings. And then on Saturday, they just pummel them. But they do it without any home runs, which is rare. We haven't seen the Yankees put up 10 runs ever, pretty much, without hitting a ball out of the ballpark. And then today, they get just enough out of their offense, the 2-run homer by Sanchez, but they get an unbelievable pitching performance from CeCe, and the bullpen shuts the door. So all sorts of ways this team is winning.
Yeah, it seems like they're just kind of adjusting to the flow of the game at this point. But, you know, CeCe was so good tonight, and he really stepped up for this team. They were having a hard time hitting Skaggs. Maybe it was the overly annoying grunting every time he threw the ball. I don't know if that was just the broadcast with ESPN.
Yeah, he might have had a hot mic on him.
I heard it later in the game too from other relievers, but you know they find their way. CeCe tonight, Gary Sanchez with the long ball, and then you know putting together a game like they did early on Saturday where they scored early, but not scoring by the home run ball. You know it's one of those things that you look at and you're trying to kind of you know make your mind up about what this team is early in a season. And you see wins like that where they're winning, you know, in a small sample size, in one series, they're winning almost 3 different ways. And that's really, really encouraging, especially when they're able to do that this early.
It goes to the depth and versatility of this team where they don't need to. Yes, they have power. Yes, the middle of the lineup is scary, and especially when they're all hitting, it's the best in baseball. But that's not the only way they can win, and that's why everyone thinks this team can win a World Series this year.
Well, and you go up and down the lineup. In the past, when we had the old Yankees before all these guys sprouted up from the minor leagues, we had multiple, you know, swing and miss guys. It was home run or bust. And, you know, at the end of Teixeira's career, it was home run or bust, it seemed. A-Rod was a home run or bust guy. There were just so many of these guys that were in the lineup that were, you know, with low batting averages and or couldn't do anything but a home run. So
it was station to station. It was like,
it was,
You had to have a three-run homer or else they didn't score any runs.
So you see that, and then now you have guys who are hitting more for average. There's a lot more balls put in play. And, you know, it's just a better mechanically working lineup. It's better all around, up and down. There's no easy out. So that's the beauty of it. You know, and I think what the team can do is they can sense on a given day if the top of the lineup is struggling. Well, the bottom, like, hey, you know, we're freaking really good ball players right now. We can carry this team being the 7, 8, 9 guys. They could carry the team, and they can because they're that good of a ball player. That the Yankees are trotting out, you know, lower in the lineup. So it's any given day, they just pick each other up. And I love that. And the camaraderie between these guys. Real quick on this. When Gary hit that home run and they were showing the dugout, Gleyber Torres, who, what, called up a week ago? A week ago this guy is called up, is coming over, grabs his face and does, like, some, like, motion that you don't do to somebody unless you know them and feel very comfortable with them. And this guy's been up a week and he's a rookie. It just shows you that this team is gelling. It doesn't matter who you are, when you come up, how many years you've played. If you can play and you're committed to this team, you know, you're welcomed immediately. And I love that.
They have not lost a game since Gleyber was called up. He's undefeated in the major leagues.
Undefeated. I love it. I saw John say that in our writers forum. It's amazing.
It is. And this offense got me into trouble on Saturday night because they put up 10 runs in the first two innings. And I had a standing deal with my girlfriend where she's just sick of watching baseball. And I kind of get that. But I said, if the Yankees go up 10 runs, this was a while ago. I said this, if they go up 10 runs, I'll turn the game off. And then she looks up, she says, oh, look, it's a 10-run lead, and it's only the second inning, so you're going to turn the game off? And I was like, ah, shit. I kind of shot myself in the foot on this one.
Yeah, you don't make deals like that. I have yet to make a deal like that because I know it will come back and get me. I just made sure that Bevan now watches the Yankees and likes the Yankees. The key is here. If anybody who's listening or you have a significant other that is not into baseball or not into the Yankees specifically, what you have to do is find out what they're into. And that's what I did with Bevan. She doesn't watch. She likes sports, but she never really watched baseball. So I got her into the background of the players, and I got her emotionally involved with the people on the team. And that is what got her. That was the linchpin. Now she likes watching because she's invested emotionally with the backstory of all the players.
I gotta try
that. It's like The Bachelor, man. You gotta relate. You gotta go like that way.
I gotta try that tactic out.
Yep, it works.
Sanchez has been hot. 21 RBIs in his last 15 games, and then we talked about the home run he hit, the absolute moon bomb he hit on Sunday, but he had the walk off home run on Thursday that kicked off capped off the Yankees homestand. And that was a game that looked like the Yankees were going to lose. And Kyle Gibson was nasty. He no hit the Yankees into the sixth inning that day. And then out of nowhere, Sanchez saves the day, 3-run homer off Rodney. And that kind of just once again got this team, pushed them with this momentum that they seem to be having right now.
Yeah, it was freaking awesome. The team was, for all intents and purposes, dead, you know, through the sixth inning when getting no hit by freaking Kyle Gibson. And you just felt like if you just get another opportunity, like there's always that chance that one of these guys is going to put one in the seats. And that's exactly what happened. He did not miss. He did not miss. He smoked the ball.
It was a good pitch, too. That was, if you look at like the pitch track, it was not a bad pitch by Rodney. He just beat him to the spot, Sanchez did. Hooked it down the left field line.
How old is Fernando Rodney?
I don't know, 400.
He's old. He's been around for a long time. I'm surprised he's still a closer in the league.
I think he blew another save over the weekend, too.
It doesn't surprise me. He's not very good.
No, the Twins, man, the Twins. Their record since 2002, the Yankees are 82-31 against Minnesota in the regular season since 2002.
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yet another embarrassment.
That is insane. Sanchez, what he's doing right now, because you still see the low batting average, but the RBIs are there. So he's been kind of cleaning up what maybe Stanton has not been able to drive in.
Well, yeah, I mean the production is for sure there. He's been an extremely productive player, even when he's struggling. And like you said, the batting average isn't there. He's still doing what he needs to do at key opportunities too. I think that's one of the biggest things is you're seeing opportunities where, you know, obviously the walk-off was the crux of the opportunity when your back is against the wall and you got to score runs, and he hit a good pitch and put it out of the park and won the game. Like, the guy is coming up in big situations, and you know, he's getting sac flies. He's doing what he needs to do to get the runs in. So the batting average is going to come because he's such a skilled batter. If you listen to A-Rod, he's a mesh between David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez with his evil little freaking sinister laugh afterwards. Like, come on, bro.
The hate is flowing.
Oh, dude,
right,
he drives
now.
Me insane. I cannot handle it. How does anybody handle that sinister little laugh he has? That little annoying cartoon laugh. It's like, I cannot handle it. His mannerisms drive me insane.
I just got an update on my phone that Ohtani is going to pitch next weekend, which maybe that'll line him up for May 26th.
That'd be nice.
That would be nice. Let's talk about the sixth inning debacle on Friday night. And Angel Hernandez and his crew had an absolutely atrocious weekend. So just quickly to recap the situation, Stanton was on second, Didi was on third, Walker hit a deep fly ball to right field. Calhoun robs him. It was probably a home run or at least an extra base hit. Both runners are tagging. Calhoun throws to second, and the umpires call Stanton out, said he left early. They do allow the run to score, though. They allow Didi to score. So the inning is over, but the Yankees get a run out of it. And that's where everything just broke down, because no one on the field seemed to know what actually happened, because Stanton's standing there saying, no, I tagged. Replays showed it looked like he tagged. Boone was kind of just like standing there with his arms up, like, what the hell did you just call? Somehow the second base umpire made that judgment call that Stanton left early, when if you also look at replays, he wasn't really in a good position to make that call. It was just a complete cluster.
You know, that play, first of all, the like you said, if the umpire was in a position to make a call, wasn't in a great position to see if he actually left the bag earlier. You watch the replay, and we have replay in baseball now, right? Like, that's supposed to be a thing, and it's supposed to make the game more clear and get the calls right. That's the bottom line, is to get the calls right. You hear it all the time. And everything was wrong about this. Everything. The fact that you couldn't challenge certain plays. The fact that you could only challenge one of however many situations were happening. The fact that Boone was going out there. Do I challenge the fact that Stanton left early or didn't leave early? Or the fact that the run scored? What am I challenging if I were to challenge something? It was a complete miss on the umpires. And I got to tell you, when I'm looking at the rules and I go back to the rule book and you look exactly what that situation was and by the rules, what is supposed to happen, like in that play, I don't understand. I understand the timing play on situations like that, but I don't really understand how a guy, even if they were to leave early, how somebody can score on that play like that. It is a forced play theoretically, but it's still a timing play for the umpire where they have the judgment call at that point, where they can say the run scored before the guy was doubled up. The rule to me by the book is confusing as well and leaves way too much control for the umpires on a play like that. But the bottom line is that replay could have cleared this up 100% easily if they said, okay, let's replay that play and get it right.
Yeah.
But you couldn't do that.
Well,
why couldn't you do that? Nobody knew. Nobody knew.
You could.
And nobody was clear on what was actually happening. Like,
right.
Even the broadcasters were saying, didn't really know what they called on the play on the field.
That was the big problem. The big problem was miscommunication. It wasn't necessarily that you couldn't challenge. It's that no one was communicating what actually happened. So then Boone only has 30 seconds to make a decision if he wants to challenge or not. He, like you kind of alluded to earlier, there's three components to that play. It's Calhoun's catch, it's if Stanton left early, and it's if Didi scored. So Boone said after the game, I was most concerned with if Didi scored. That makes sense. The run is the most important thing. But if he had just challenged that, that wouldn't have made a difference for if Stanton left early or not. If he had just challenged Calhoun's catch, all it would have mattered was, did Calhoun catch the ball? So he would have had to challenge, did the run score? But he didn't want to do that and then have it overturned.
So, but see, here's the flaw in that. The flaw in that, if you're challenging that Didi's scoring, then part of the reason if Didi's scoring or not goes into the timing play on if Stanton were tagged in time or if
well
they,
it does
if
and it doesn't tag. It does and it doesn't, because all it really matters is when did Simmons put his foot on the bag to call him out at second. It doesn't matter when Stanton left.
Well, that's the thing. The point is he put his foot on the bag, and that's what you're looking at. But what if he tagged? Then it doesn't matter if he put his foot on the bag. It's irrelevant.
Yeah, it kind of all breaks. It's a play in baseball. Everything flows together, and that is the problem. It should okay. This
right. You
this
have to
cluster,
challenge the play.
This cluster that just happened on the field. I am challenging that. You shouldn't have to pick and choose what you're specifically
right. Components of a play.
Reviewing. Right.
Exactly.
And they called it a sacrifice double play. And I think what you were talking about earlier is that, what is that? That doesn't make any sense, because if it's second, if it's bases loaded, one out, and the ball's hit to the shortstop and he goes around the horn for a double play, the run doesn't score. Is that what you were kind of getting at earlier?
Yeah, I think it's a dumb rule. I think it's a dumb rule because if you leave early and they go back to second base while the ball is still in play and the runner's called out, that's a force. You don't have to tag him. It's a force. The run shouldn't score at that point. And this is a baseball rule that I think is bad. But at the same time, if you do it after the play and you appeal to the base, at the same time, if he left early, if the umpire calls him out at that point, run shouldn't score. Like, why would that run score? It makes no sense. I don't really understand that rule at all. Like, I understand the timing play, and maybe there's other situations that I'm not thinking of in this moment that comes into play. But in that particular situation, it makes no sense. The bottom line is, here's one of the things that I think they really need to change with replay. In situations like that, where honestly, nobody has any idea what's happening, there needs to be someone who's watching the game from New York or whomever saying, we're challenging the play. We're going to get this right. We're going to make sure that this is right. And it shouldn't matter. It should just, let's get the play right, because that's the reason why replay was there. It's not for to put the managers in situations where, you know, they have to replay something in order to get it right. But if they don't, then they're just going to leave the play on the field. Like, that wasn't the purpose of it. The purpose of it is to get the play right. So if that is the purpose, then there should be some kind of an over someone watching the game, someone who's in New York or wherever they are, saying, okay, we need to replay this because it's not right. Or the crew chief saying, we need to replay this, if they're unsure at all.
I agree. And I think the reason that MLB put in the 30-second rule is so that managers don't delay. And they're so concerned with pace of play, they don't want to extend the game anymore. But what we find ourselves in these situations with a lot of these replays anyway, that it's taking 3, 4, 5 minutes. So what's another 35, 40 seconds on that? I'd rather have the play right. Either don't have it at all, or just get the friggin' play right. I think we say that every time one of these weird challenge situations comes up.
Well, that's the biggest thing. If you're going to implement replay and it's going to be this big of a part in our game now, then you got to get the calls right if they're that clear. I mean, they could have sorted this out. They could have gone to the rule book and said, this is what it is. And at that point, they could have gotten the call right on the field as the rule states, right? They could have had that. The umpires could have said, you know, they could have looked, they could have said, oh, tagged up, no problem. Runners advanced. Everything was fine. There was no problems with that play, actually. This whole thing shouldn't have happened because everybody did what they were supposed to do when they were supposed to do it. And it would have been the end of that. And the Yankees would still have been up.
On plays like these, why don't umps have to explain themselves? Like NFL refs have to get on a microphone and explain why they called pass interference or whatever happened in a play in an NFL game. I'm not saying that an ump has to do that every time there's a play on the field, but when something like this happens, there needs to be better communication. Everybody needs to be on the same page from both teams. You can't just be guessing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that they would implement anything like that in game, but after the game, I think they should be, you know, open. They should have to give a statement on this, and I'm sure they did. But there should be.
But it doesn't. It really doesn't matter after the game because the play's over. And
once the play's over, it's over. It doesn't matter anyway. Like nothing that you can do will change what happened. So who cares? You got to have a short memory at that point.
So. in one way, the Yankees got lucky that the run scored, because if you look at the replay, I think Simmons put his foot on the bag before Didi put his foot on home plate. But the Yankees also got screwed because Stanton actually did tag up, and they should have had a, they should have had a runner on third base with two outs and a run in. So
yeah,
it was the umps got it wrong on every way they could get it wrong.
It was a terrible play.
I'm so happy.
And there was nothing to be called. That's the worst part. Nothing should have been called.
Right. I think nothing. Simmons duped Angel Hernandez. I think Angel Hernandez was the guy at second base at that point. I think he actually duped him.
I didn't see enough of that. I don't know. I don't know if he duped him or not. I mean, if you don't see the guy tagging, I mean, who cares what Angel, what Simmons did? It's all about when.
Well, it's like Simmons acted so emphatic that he had the ball, like that he put his tagged him and that he left early, that Hernandez was like, oh yeah, he did leave early.
Well, then you didn't see Stanton at all, right? If that's the case.
I don't think
he
did.
So the fact that he duped him, if you're saying that he duped him afterwards by trying to sell a play that has no bearing on anything, because the only part of that that has any bearing on the situation is if the runner left early or not, nothing to do with the shortstop, then, you know, if that's Angel Hernandez, if he was that guy, then yeah, he needs to be dealt with and fined or something, because that's terrible. That's a bad baseball play.
I'm just very happy that didn't come back and bite him in the ass, because it could have. The Yankees got the sack fly out of Gardner to tie that game up late, and then Didi again coming up huge. Just like I was surprised. Like I said on the post game recap video, I was surprised when Didi hit the home run, and then I thought about it for a second. I'm like, no, that makes sense. That's what Didi does.
Yeah, I mean, he's been phenomenal in big situations, and I'm glad it went down that way. I'm glad that they won the game, obviously, and it didn't cost them anything, because it would have been such a sour taste, and it definitely would have been the biggest story if they had lost this game. Even if they had won 2 of 3, I still think we're talking about that one that got away because of this debacle by the umpires. And I put this on baseball as well, because they really don't have this replay system figured out well at all. And you know, if all of us are watching this game and can identify that, why in the hell in someone in the freaking offices in New York, in the league offices, can't identify the situations that they're having and you know, put them all in a file, and after the season audit the living shit out of everything that happened and fix it. It's not that hard.
Yeah, they're a little too rule happy. Like, you tweeted out the picture of like the image screenshot of the rules, and there's like 50 sub bullets to this thing. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's confusing, and you know, you have to go back to look, because a lot of them blend together. So
yeah, and you think some of these old time umps actually remember all this stuff? Like, are they tested on this on a yearly basis, do you think?
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. You have to be, because it's an extensive rule book, and you know, there are so many different small little plays that make a difference, given a situation that you know has a lot of bearing on the outcome. So you got to be up to date with every single one of them.
One thing I was curious about this weekend was, how did Tanaka follow up his really good start against Minnesota? And he pitched well on Saturday. 6 innings, one run, only 2 hits, 9 strikeouts, 2 walks. He gave up a solo home run to Cozart. But then you also have to understand that he had a 10-run lead after the second inning. So yes, it's great. The results were there. But the Angels also weren't really trying. So I'm pushing the how does Tanaka follow up his 2 good starts to the Houston start, because that's really going to be a big test.
Yeah, I think there's some of the things you look at is, you know, it's a different game. Obviously, when you're up 10-0 at that point, you're going to be a lot more aggressive. The Angels are going to be swinging a lot more too. But he threw a lot more fastballs, and that also could be indicative of what was going on in the situation. Like, you're trying to get the ball over the plate, trying to get, you know, you're not trying to nibble around the Sonny Gray. See if Sonny Gray were pitching, he would have nibbled still.
105 pitches in 4 2/3 innings if he was pitching in that game.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know, you see a start like that, you see him going aggressive, throwing that fastball. Yeah, I think part of your concern too was that he didn't have, you know, he couldn't throw the fastball because he was scared to throw the fastball. And you know, maybe he's proving to everybody, and he's still throwing the fastball even in a 10-run game. I mean, if it's not good, it's still going to get hit, and it really didn't. I mean, he struck out a lot of guys, so it's good to see that, you know, he was able to follow it up.
I think he's proving to himself that he can still throw the fastball. I think that's the biggest thing.
See, I don't think any of that is accurate. I think it's all game plan. I think it was all game plan, and they went away from the game plan and got too carried away with the breaking stuff and just went down a rabbit hole.
It was game plan against the Miami Marlins, who have one major league hitter to throw all sliders and splitters. I have a hard time believing that.
I don't. I think it's game plan for Tanaka, period, and they started doing that. They have a game plan no matter who you're playing. Yeah, they'll tweak it given the opponent, but they're going to go in with a plan for every single pitcher, and they know like the style and the type of things that they're going to do. And I think that they got too off-speed happy with Tanaka, and I think that you're going to have a relatively similar game plan in the way that you throw, especially a guy like him, and then you tweak it to you know whatever the team you're playing. So I don't know. I think it's a change in strategy.
Is that maybe what Sonny Gray is struggling with too? Is this different type of game plan in New York versus in Oakland?
I have a hard time believing that because it doesn't seem like he's throwing. He throws a lot of different pitches. You know, it's not like he doesn't throw the fastball or he doesn't throw certain breaking balls. He's throwing all of his pitches. He's just not throwing them over the plate. He just can't locate anything.
Yeah,
he's screwed between the ears right now. I think he's worried. My personal opinion is that I think he's worried about re-injuring himself because of the elbow injury. I think he's still gun shy from that injury,
and that's a big problem.
That is a big problem, and I think that his mechanics are suffering because of that, and his confidence are going along for the ride. And I think he needs to, you know, just let his body take over and pitch the way he knows. And if he gets hurt, he gets hurt.
The last time out for Sonny Gray was the mechanics change, right? That was the first time he went out there with a mechanics change, or was it two starts now?
That was two starts ago. The last one was with Romine, and he was, you know,
equally as bad.
Everybody was coming, and I said this in the post game video too. I'm like, you know, part of me was like, okay, maybe I could take something out of this because I did see better pitches on certain times. Like I said, if you take certain pitches and you remove them from the grand, you know, from the entire game, like those certain pitches were executed well, and I hadn't seen that, you know, in some of his other starts. So you can, even listening to what they were talking at the end, Boone and Gray, like they were all like, yeah, step forward. I'm like, okay, whatever the hell you got to tell yourself to, you know, think it's a step forward, that's fine. Just make sure it's an actual step forward the next time you're coming out.
Right. Can everyone agree that it's a step forward other than just you?
Yeah. Let's all be on the same page with the next one and actually perform well. That will be good.
And it's frustrating because Sonny Gray, just look at what CC did tonight, where Sonny Gray has three times as good of stuff at CC at this point in his career, but CC still attacks. He still throws fastballs and he throws strikes. And he had seven innings, one run, a lot of soft contact. I believe ESPN had the stat that CC has the second best exit velocity against rate in the major leagues. He's given up five total earned runs in his five starts, so his ERA is 171. 97 pitches, so we saw Boone let him go out there for the seventh inning, throw a little bit more pitches than his last couple times out, which I thought was a fantastic move by Boone for a couple reasons. One, CC was going really well, so push him a little bit. Two, it allowed CC to attack the bottom of the order in the seventh inning, and then you have Chad Green for the heart of the order.
And I think that was a big part of why he came back out. I think if the top of the order was up, we wouldn't have seen CC in the seventh.
Agreed.
But the fact that the bottom of the order was up, you didn't have Mike Trout coming up to bat with a one run game. That was much easier for him to make that decision. But he pitched well. He, you know, like that's the type of thing that you love to see because it's your manager giving the confidence to the player, but then the player getting the manager's back at that point, saying like, okay, you let me out here for the seventh. I haven't done this in a couple years. I don't the seventh inning. It's been a while, but I'm going to perform. And now, you know, I'm showing you it's like a return of confidence back and forth. And I love that because I think that's important early on. These guys are still feeling each other out. They're friends. Like, don't forget that. Everybody, I think, sometimes forgets the fact that Boone and CeCe are actual friends off the field as well and knew each other and played together in Cleveland as well. So there's a lot of trust in that relationship.
Yeah, we learned that on the broadcast tonight. See, you're bashing the broadcast tonight, but we got a lot of gems out of A-Rod in that team.
I like Vasgersian. I think he's very good.
We learned that A-Rod's favorite moment of being a teammate of CC was his midsummer barbecue every year.
Right, right. And I was telling you before we started recording that A-Rod's that guy who gets invited to your party that you didn't want to really invite to that party and is the only guy that is talking about the party years later saying, oh, yeah, I remember I was at that party just to make sure that people know that you were at that party and you were there. Even though nobody wanted you there, but you were still there.
It's like in The Office when Michael gets the Evite by accident from Jim. And it's like, yeah. Ah, crap. Now we have to let him come.
Yeah. You think Jeter was going to those barbecues and he's like, CeCe, really? You had to invite Alex. Why? Why is he here?
Who do you think was the wildest teammate at those barbecues? See, I'm thinking back to 09 when like Cano and Melky were still on the team and friendly and friends, and they were the young kids. They were probably doing some weird shit.
No, Robinson Cano was like, I can't see him doing anything weird off the field. Melky maybe. Melky's making up fake websites and like printing fake IDs at these parties. AJ Burnett's a weird guy, so I'm sure he was doing weird shit.
Right. All right, some injury updates. Greg Bird took on-field batting practice and sprinted. So that's big news for Bird and his
sprinted,
foot.
Sprinted slowly.
Sprinted for Greg Bird.
Sprinted, yeah, I was going to say sprinted in quotes.
Is a light jog for the average person. Brennan Drury played in a doubleheader, and we actually mentioned him in a mailbag question coming up. So he played in a doubleheader. He's actually had a pretty good rehab for Scranton so far. And we have, like I said, a lot of mailbag questions about Drury and what the Yankees are going to do when he returns. Ellsbury, still no on-field activities, and he may never play baseball again.
I don't think he's going to. I think we're going to see another injury. I'm going to, you know, I don't like to laugh at injuries, but at this point I don't really believe that they're actual injuries. But we're going to hear some other random-ass injury after the what does he have now? Something in his
plantar fasciitis.
I mean, those plantar fasciitis lasts a long time. I mean, if you think about like running backs, plantar fasciitis, that takes like you're not the same for the entire year.
It's not quite as bad as turf toe, but it's almost.
Isn't it the same thing? I thought turf toe is plantar fasciitis. Yeah.
Oh, what?
I thought it's just like the non-sexy version of saying that.
Okay, and what is gout?
Gout is you drink too much beer, and David Wells, I don't know if it's the first thing I think of, is you drink too much beer and you get gout. It's when you're, or you eat too many, like, I think fish.
Fatty foods or something?
Yeah. Like my father-in-law.
So Ellsbury does not have gout.
Does not have gout. No.
But he might. He might. It might come up in a couple weeks.
In July, he might have gout. That could happen. Or, you know, it might be, he might have an extra bone in his foot now. He got the extra bird bone from Greg Bird.
They installed the extra bird bone into Ellsbury's foot. Can Ellsbury give Bird his speed? Because that's really the only thing Ellsbury's good for.
Ellsbury has no speed with turf toe.
Okay, Ellsbury with turf toe versus Greg Bird in a race. Who wins?
Ooh, I think Ellsbury still will win that race.
I agree.
It will hurt, but he will win.
Well, I don't know about his pain tolerance.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's probably not really injured, so he would smoke him.
Frazier is playing down in Tampa. He went 2-for-4 with a homer. And then Tommy Canley has resumed playing catch. So, you know, the long list of injuries that were hurting this roster for a while and were one of the reasons why the Yankees got off to that bad start, they got a lot of guys coming back within the next, you know, short period, a week or two, and then in a longer period, maybe when Bird and those guys are back.
And Bird's talking about May at some point. I mean, that's what you read, you see, and read what he's been saying. That, you know, towards the end of May, like, well, that's his time frame.
End of May, yeah.
In May, at some point, I'm saying at the end because there's no way they're going to rush him back. You know, I think June is probably more realistic. I wouldn't be surprised until if it was around the All-Star break, though. But you know, they're going to take it slowly with him for sure.
Well, the beauty right now, anyway, is that when Tyler Austin is back, if he's still playing, and then if you get Drury back and you can shift him around the infield, maybe you can take your time with Greg Bird to make sure he's 100%.
Yeah, because I think it's important. I think it's important for him to be back when he's 100%. Like, there's no doubt about, there's nothing wrong with his foot. And if that's an extended stint in the minor leagues at some point, just to get that extra, you know, reps and put the extra stress on the foot to actually test it for a longer period of time. If this team's going well, I got no problems with that. I think it'll be big for his confidence too, knowing that he's tested it. He's done everything he possibly can. It doesn't hurt. And now he's going in with a full head of steam into New York.
And that's what bit him in the ass when he tried to come back the first time last year, right, is that he wasn't 100%.
It's just so important at this point in his career, and at this point with, you know, the whole situation with him and the Yankees. It's been one disappointment after another, and it hasn't been because of, you know, his play. I mean, yeah, because of the injuries, but it all goes back to the injuries. It all goes back to the injuries. So you better make damn well sure that he is fully healthy and able to come back, you know, and giving it his best opportunity to succeed. So
Yankees are heading into Houston with a ton of momentum right now. Rematch of the ALCS. The Astros are the team everyone thought they were going to be. First in the AL West. So this is going to be a fun four games in Houston.
Yeah, it's going to be a big series. You know, early on, it's coming. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. First, especially if Sonny Gray pitches well on Monday, because that's going to be a big factor in how I feel about everything. It's gonna you know, get us going, or it's going to piss us off beyond belief. And even though we've won 9 in a row, none of that matters if Sonny Gray comes out and throws up a complete joke of a performance again, because he's done it too many times already. And he's not that pitcher. He shouldn't be that pitcher. He's never been that pitcher until he came to New York. So he needs to shake the shit out of himself and get rid of this. The yips or whatever the hell is wrong with him.
And I still think, despite the 9 wins in a row, that unless Sonny Gray gets his act together, this team is not going to go where we want them to go.
He's a key cog to this team. Absolutely. He's a big part of the team. I think what's helping us right now is we're seeing really good pitching performances out of CeCe and Jordan Montgomery, and it's masking what the problem with Sonny will be later on in the season.
And Severino, we kind of glossed over Severino on Friday night, but he was fantastic. Very economical. He gave up the 3 runs in the 7th inning, or two, I think it was 2 runs in the 7th inning. I forget exactly, but he was very good again.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mention him in that list because it's a given. Like, this guy has come out this year and just been that dominant guy, and even when he's not on his best stuff, you're seeing him able to go in, you know, I think he had one performance. What it was a couple, 2 or 3 starts ago, where he
against
got
Boston.
Into the 5th inning. Yeah, he was bad that day, just overall bad. And you know, that's going to happen. You're going to have bad starts. But he comes back, and then the last start when he just didn't have his best stuff, but still going out there and pitching deep into a game. That's huge.
So it's Sonny versus Charlie Morton, Monty versus Verlander, Severino versus Keuchel, and then Tanaka versus Lance McCullers on Thursday. The Yankees do not face Gerrit Cole because he pitched on Sunday for the Astros. Quickly before we move on to mailbags, May 26th event, we were talking about it earlier, and we've reminded you guys every single episode, so there's no friggin' excuse for you to not have your tickets at this point.
Yeah, come on, get them. If you haven't, make sure you get your group. I know I've been talking to some people on Twitter as well, have been DMing me, who are getting their groups together. Start filtering them in so that we can get the t-shirts and everything ordered earlier. I'm going to get them ordered earlier this time so that everybody has them in hand 110% for the 26th. I will have a cutoff date at some point in the next week or two for getting those t-shirts for game time. But definitely, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be so much fun. We're going to the brewery. You get a beer along with the ticket, $68, the t-shirt, a beer, the pregame party at the brewery, and then obviously the game ticket in section 205, 206 versus the Angels. So it's going to be a fun day of baseball.
It'll be an actual home game against the Angels.
It will be another home game against the Angels. Yeah.
All right, stay tuned for mailbags, which we recorded 4 hours ago.
It ain't hard to tell. I excel. My poetry's deep, I never felt.
Okay, guys, let's get to mailbags now. And just full disclosure that Scott and I are recording these about 20 minutes before the Sunday night game. So for all stats, for all that kind of stuff, just take that with a grain of salt, knowing that we are doing it before the game here. Because we know, Scott, if we say a stat incorrectly, we're going to hear about it.
100%. But Sunday night game, it'll probably be over at midnight. Exactly. We're going to record some of it early.
The first one's from John Mazzella from our Facebook group. And he says, I know Gardner is well-liked, but is it time for him to bat down in the order? Hicks or Torres can lead off. I just can't see him make another out anymore. And he's right. Gardner has not had a good start to the season. He's batting .217, which is 20 for 92. His OBP is still solid, .345. So the guy's still getting walks. He has 18 walks on the season. It's just the hits have not been there for Gardy.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the OBP, that's the biggest number for him, honestly. For a leadoff guy in this order, you need to get on base, and it doesn't matter how you get on base. The fact is that Gardner still is giving you an extremely professional at-bat. He's working the count. He's doing his job. He's good on the base paths. You got all the mashing guys behind him. So who gives a shit how he gets on base? As long as he's getting on base, that's the only thing that matters, honestly. But the fact that he is that veteran guy, he is, don't forget guys, he is like the leader. They called him their captain last year. He's not the captain, but he was their captain. So this is a guy that has a lot of clout in the dugout. And, you know, the longest tenured Yankee, he's not going anywhere. He's the leadoff guy, and he's going to stay the leadoff guy.
I would be a lot more concerned if he wasn't having good at-bats and wasn't getting on base, but it's just the hits haven't fallen for him, because I looked up some of his advanced stats, some of his rate stats. He's actually walking a higher percentage of the time this year, which tells me he's seeing the ball well and he's having good at-bats. And he's not striking out anymore. His batting average on balls in play is significantly lower than his career average. It's 275, and his career average is 314. So right there tells you why his batting average is so much lower. And his BABIP is also lower than league average, which I forget. I think it's like 297 is league average. So maybe he's had some bad luck situations.
So let's just talk about BABIP for a second here for everybody.
I knew you'd like that one.
Because we've talked about this a number of times. And this is one of those stats that I actually don't mind, because I think it's telling. When you look at the numbers compared to what the batting average is, and for those that really don't follow the advanced stats, is the bat. Why don't you explain BABIP? Because I will probably butcher it.
Batting average on balls in play.
So basically, it's when the ball is when there's contact and the ball is put in play. What percentage of them are outs and what percentage of them are hits? And the batting average will tell you the same stat, except for it will tell you the difference between the hits and the outs. So it's telling the fact that you're seeing how many balls were put in play. And then you can actually deduct almost that, or deduce that, yeah, there is some bad luck into it when you're seeing it. You know, I think when you're looking at the BABIP and you're looking at the batting average and you're comparing the two, you can start looking at some old Chase Headley numbers in the sense of, you know, what is the velocity off the bat? What's the exit velo? Because his, if you remember, was like negative for a little while. Things like that. You can kind of then say, okay, this guy's putting a lot of balls in play, but they're not hit hard. So maybe that's leading to me, he's not making good contact. Or, well, yeah, they are hit hard, but his BABIP is low, so that's hard hit balls, but they're going at people.
Well, we're not saying either of those scenarios, because I actually don't know if Gardner's...
No, but I'm just trying to paint a picture of why that... I think I think it's a very good stat.
I agree, and sometimes you see guys have good BABIP luck. Like, remember when Ben Gamel was hitting like 360 last year for a little period of time, and his batting average on balls in play was up over 400, and you could kind of deduce that it's a little fluky, that batting average. And maybe you think Gardner's BABIP is going to come back towards 300, which is where his career average is, and then that batting average creeps up 30, 40 points, and then boom, you've got a normal Gardner season. So I think he's there for at least the foreseeable future in the leadoff spot. Although one thing we are seeing is he's sitting a lot more against lefties, which is not what, I mean, the way Girardi used him, he would be in there most days, like righty or lefty.
Well, and I think Boone is also trying to conserve his legs, and they want to make sure. Gardner's a streaky player. I mean, we've known that for a long time. When he's not right, he's not right, and he stays not right for a while. And if he gets beat up, he will play through these injuries, and you'll assume that he's hurt somehow, or just, you know, sore or whatever, but he just keeps playing because that's the way he is. And while I appreciate that, he's definitely not the same player when he's beat up, especially at this point in his career. So, you know, he's a guy that's not going to be, when he's going well, he gets really hot and you start seeing, the very, very good Gardner. But even when he's struggling, like right now, I'd say he's struggling if we're looking at the numbers, but still at the end of the day, a struggling Brett Gardner is still getting on base a lot and is seeing a lot of pitches. And that is what I want to see from my leadoff guy in this particular order.
And he had a nice at bat pinch hitting for Ronald Torres the other night on Friday to get the sac fly to tie the game. So I'm still seeing when Gardner's up there, I don't see him overmatched. So I think the hits are going to come for him. What do we have next?
Next is from Gavin Mulcahy. He says, are the Yankees comfortable with Shreve as their main lefty out of the pen? I think Chapman's left-handedness is underutilized with him confined in the ninth inning. It would be one thing if it was our only solid guy out there, but Robertson is an established major league closer. Why not give Robertson the ninth, use Chapman in more of an Andrew Miller role? Chapman swag doesn't deal with anything but the ninth inning. Chapman swag is a ninth inning guy. He is a ninth inning guy. I'm sure there were talks about that when he re-signed with the Yankees saying, I am the closer. I don't want to be anywhere else unless you're just the worst pitcher on the team, which he was for a little bit last year. But yeah, he's the ninth inning guy. Of anybody, he's the guy that's going to be the closer. I think Robertson actually gives you more flexibility.
There's a few things to unpack with this mailbag. First of all, it's that I am much more comfortable with Chad Green or David Robertson coming in and trying to clean up any fireman situation, any Andrew Miller type role than I am Chapman. I don't know about you.
Yeah, well, Chapman's not built for that. I mean, that kind of goes back to what I was saying. He's a ninth inning guy. He's better with when there's no runners on. And you know, he's used to blowing guys away without runners on. So it's not what he's used to.
And secondly, Trayson Shreve has very quietly had a really good season so far. 11.1 innings pitched. He's faced 48 batters, has only given up one earned run, which is a 0.79 ERA, and he struck out 16 guys. So this is the Trayson Shreve that we saw at the beginning of 2015, where we were like...
Was it 15 or 16? I was just going to ask you that.
No, it was 15 because I went back and looked it up. I mean, he spent a good amount of time in the minors in 16 and 17. Yeah. But the first half of 2015, Shreve was actually one of their best relief pitchers, and he came over from Atlanta in the Manny Bañuelos trade, and we're like, damn, the Yankees kind of just stole Shreve out of nowhere, and then he fell off the face of the earth.
It was Shreve, but the main target in that trade, if you remember correctly, was David Johnson, who was the right-handed reliever that came over that was just the worst guy of all
Carpenter. And
he was the highlight of that trade.
He could throw like 100 miles an hour, but it was straight down the middle every single time.
He was terrible. He was completely awful.
I just completely blacked him out of my memory.
Yeah. He was Chase Headley for you before Chase Headley was
Chase Headley. He was. Go back and listen to some 2015 podcasts. I went on some epic rants about Carpenter.
Yeah. But no, Jason Shreve has had a good year for sure. He's definitely found that spot. And, you know, I think when we were talking about this in the offseason, you know, I think the importance of having a lefty out of the bullpen was, you know, not high on the priority list because of the overall talent in the bullpen and guys that can come in and still pitch against lefties. I mean, David Robertson is still good against lefties. But the fact that Chase and Shreve is now putting together this early season that he is, you know, it's more of an asset. Now Boone has that matchup guy that he can go to as a lefty out of the pen. So it's a very good thing. It makes the bullpen even better.
And also about the Andrew Miller role, I think that's he's not even really used as what we think of the Andrew Miller role. That got overblown because of the 2016 playoffs when Francona would use Miller in like the fourth inning or the ninth inning or the 12th inning, whenever he needed him. But in the regular season, Miller, especially this year, has been pitching like a traditional relief pitcher. He's 10 innings in 11 games, and he's only appeared in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. So I understand that he's not their closer. They have a closer. But Miller is being used more traditionally as like a David Robertson role or a Chad Green role in the regular season.
And Miller is not, I mean, Gavin's asking about having our main lefty out of the pen. Andrew Miller is not dubbed as the main lefty out of the pen. He's the main guy out of the pen. It doesn't matter. The matchups for a guy like Andrew Miller don't matter as much. You're not bringing him in for only a lefty matchup and then taking him out. Like, he is a guy that can pitch to right-handed batters and get them out. And we have guys like that. They're not left-handed pitchers, but when you look at Tommy Kahnle when he's right, but you look at David Robertson, Chad Green, like, these guys they can pitch against, you know, a lefty or a righty. So we kind of do have that guy. But specific to your question, Shreve is the only lefty out of the pen, but I don't think it's used. He's very different than Andrew Miller. I mean, by a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you can't compare.
The role is very different, though. The role is very different.
Sure, Shreve is still trying to prove himself, I think.
Shreve is a matchup. Shreve actually is a matchup where Andrew Miller is not a matchup guy.
And I think that you ride the hot hand with Shreve, but then you understand that this thing could blow up at any minute.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I'm happy Shreve is pitching well. I'm sure Boone is thrilled, and he's actually picked up some of the slack that we saw when Kahnle was struggling. Then Kahnle went on the DL. Betances has been all over the map at this point. Like, you don't know if he's going to come in and strike out the side or just give up everything. Walks, home runs, errors, stolen bases of home. I mean, he's just a complete wild card. So Shreve has given them, he's picked up some slack there.
Yeah, you got to give credit for the kid, you know? Doing well, doing his job. Good for him.
The next question is one we got from like 20 different people. It is about Brandon Drury and the first base, third base situation. So thank you, Toy Thiveridge from our Facebook.
I think his name is Troy.
Troy?
Yeah. Not Toy.
Did I say Toy? I meant Troy.
It's okay.
Yeah. Marta, Nerdy McGurdy, Seth, Jason, Brian, and Ryan for all submitting questions about Drury. Did not want to think we were ignoring you, but basically they're asking, what do the Yankees do when Brendan Drury and Greg Bird are both back and healthy? And Duari can't take him out of the lineup because of the way he's been performing. Do they DFA Walker? So all of these things are in play with the infield.
Yeah, and one of our guys, Tom Hanselin, just wrote an article about Andujar and the decision being very easy for the Yankees at this point with Drury coming back. You don't take him out of the lineup because this guy has solidified himself as the third baseman for the time being, and I bet he's even earned himself some leash as well. This is a guy that's going to be the third baseman of the future, they think. So they're going to, now that they've seen what he can do, they're going to give him every opportunity. The nice thing about Drury, one, he's hitting in the rehab, so he can see, and he's not having these headaches, which is good.
Right, but did you hear what he said about it? He said that, yeah, this happens all the time. I can see again, but then it'll just come back out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, hopefully they've actually narrowed it down, because it seems like they caught the root of this problem, right? We'll see. Yeah. But he's hitting well, and the nice thing about Drury is he is a lot more flexible than Andujar. So he can actually go and play second base if need be. He could play a bit of first. I know we looked it up. He only played one game last year at first.
Yeah.
But he's got the ability to go around and do that. And I think that's, one that's 100% going to keep him on the roster. He's a very valuable player. The Yankees traded for him for a reason. But I don't think it's a question at this point, who's the third baseman?
Yeah, and I know you said Andujar is the third baseman of the future, and he's hitting like it certainly right now, but Drury is only 25 years old, and Brian Cashman traded for him, loved him as a player, loved him at third base, so Brian Cashman maybe 3-4 weeks ago thought Brendan Drury was the third baseman of the future.
Yeah, it's possible for sure, and I think there was still skepticism out there with Andujar and how he plays defense and all the things we've heard about. I haven't seen any of that. So far he's been as advertised with the bat and better than advertised with the glove.
No, I mean, better than advertised all around. I mean, yeah. 12 doubles in 19 games, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, but he was hitting like, what, 667 last year? So, yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. If Andujar is this kind of bat, that you put up with mediocre defense at third base.
Yeah, but again, I'm not seeing mediocre defense. I'm seeing a guy
that
can play the position just fine. Yeah,
you would accept that.
Right. If he's hitting if he's getting a double every single day, and I saw your tweet about changing his name to double, like Madonna, it's interesting. You should think about it probably. How do you say double in Spanish? Because that would probably be more accurate for what he would want. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. It took like 19 years of Spanish. Still have no idea. But it's the way
double.
He's going.
Double.
Double? Did you just make that up?
Or doble.
Okay.
It's probably doble.
Doble? I don't know about that one.
I just Googled it. D-O-B-L-E.
The fact is Andujar is taking this job, with a stranglehold and is doing nothing to say that, it's at risk at all. But Drury, who is hitting well right now in his rehab assignments, he's a talented ball player. He can play other positions. So he's got a very valuable role on the team still.
The thing is, though, when Drury is ready to come back, they will activate him and put him on the roster. So who comes off the roster?
I don't know who's going to make potentially a pitcher. I think that's probably going to be the first move, but
this team with the way their starting pitchers are, I don't think they go one bullpen short.
I don't know. I could see them doing it for a short time to figure things out. But so the one guy I think is who has been playing very well is still on notice to the fact that, we need to see longer production is still Tyler Austin, because When Bird does come back, and I know we'll be talking about him, but when he does come back, he will be the first baseman. And then you have Tyler Austin taking up a roster spot, who is the backup first baseman. Well, if you have a guy like Chris Drury, who can play different...
Brandon Drury.
You know how many times I've done that? The hockey player Chris Drury. Brandon Drury, who can play different positions, then he becomes more of a flexibility potential for for Boone. So I think that's the battle right there. I think Tyler Austin really has to continue to play his ass off to keep his spot long term.
Let's read the question from Matt Duncan right now. He says, could Tyler Austin be a long-term solution at first base? And as long as Greg Bird is on the roster and healthy, and I know that's a huge if. That might be the biggest if we've ever said on this podcast. But I don't see Austin beating out Greg Bird for first base. And that is really the biggest thing against Austin at this point is he doesn't have flexibility. He can't. I guess he could play right field, but you got two right fielders already. So Austin is really relegated to first base, and that's a problem if he's only a backup player, especially when, like you said, Drury can play all over the diamond. You've got other players who can shift around. You don't have that flexibility with Austin.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big knocks on him. I mean, he had such an opportunity last year to take this thing, you know, take the first base job and really, really just go with it, and he couldn't stay healthy, unfortunately, for him. And now we're seeing when he's healthy, when he's right and getting a lot of at-bats, like he's been a very good player. He's been good. You know, he's not a great defender, but he's an average defender, maybe a little bit above average, but he's a good bat. He can go the opposite field. So his swing actually does play to Yankee Stadium, even though he is a right-handed batter because of the home runs. I mean, if you look at his home runs, the majority of them are, they're oppo tacos, man. They're going to right field. The guys,
and they're all in
field.
Huge spots. Like he's got something crazy where it's like 9 out of 10 home runs either tie or put the Yankees ahead.
You could tell he's wired differently. You know,
he's
wired,
a hardo. Yeah, he's a big time hardo.
He's definitely wired in the way where he wants that big at bat. He wants the big situation to go up and to take advantage of that point. So that doesn't surprise me. It's great that he is that guy. But yeah, like you said, it's the defensive position at this point, and the fact that Brandon Drury is there and can play first base, I think will definitely hurt his long term his status. Unless of course Greg Bird cannot come back fully healthy and stay healthy.
Well, let's just play the game out. And I understand. Don't give me the cop-out answer. These things always figure themselves out. Someone else will get injured. I understand that. And that is probably what will happen. But let's assume everybody stays healthy, knock on wood. You have Greg Bird and Brendan Drury back. That means two guys have to come off the roster.
So again, I think it's going to be a bullpen guy. And then I think Tyler Austin's the guy that will come off.
See,
but I think they're going to, I think at this point, and I know a lot of people want to say Neil Walker, but I think at this point with Tyler Austin having minor league options, they're going to keep him because that gives, they're going to send him down because that gives them flexibility. And the fact that the Neil Walker, maybe he broke out, maybe there's some little bit of a breakout. I mean, eventually he's going to.
He got screwed on Friday.
He was hitting the ball hard. We've been saying for how long this guy is a professional hitter. This is his MO. This is his the back of his baseball card says he can hit over a long period of time. So I still expect him to hit at some point. And I think this just buys more time for them to add more flexibility because he's a guy that can play multiple positions.
Well, I think there'll be a breaking point with Neil Walker where if it's mid-June and he's still not hitting and you have Bird healthy and you have Drury healthy, they might just cut their losses. And they might regret it because then someone else might get hurt and then Neil Walker would have been a nice player to have. But I can't imagine they're going to just keep trotting out Neil Walker if everybody other than him is hitting.
No, I agree. But I just think it's been so long that he hasn't hit that we're about to see a hot streak from Neil Walker.
Yeah, no, and Friday night kind of indicated that. He hit a ball really deep to left field with two runners on and got caught at the warning track. And then he got robbed of a home run. And then the whole debacle play, which in the future we will talk about, which you guys already heard pass in this podcast. So you already know our feelings about that, even though I haven't stated my feelings about that yet.
Right, right. Yeah, this is confusing.
Yep. Next question from Josh. Pazer underscore Josh on Twitter. What do you think Tyler Wade's role is going forward?
I think Tyler Wade's role going forward is going to be the prospect shortstop on another team. I don't think he has a role on this team. I think if injuries were to play, like we were just talking about, if you look at hypotheticals like that, then yeah, he can come in and slide in. But I don't see him as a long-term anything for any position. You look at all the positions on the field, ones that have full-time roles, and Tyler Wade does not fit in any one of them. If you potentially talk about a utility guy role, which is the X factor, the additional guy on the bench who can go out and play multiple positions, that is a role that he can fill potentially. But we have a guy who literally is leading the major leagues in batting average, who is in that spot right now, can play different positions and is a guy that they depend on and know that they can depend on. So I just don't see a spot for him.
Do you think we'll ever see Tyler Wade on the Yankees again in a non-September call-up situation?
Yes, because injuries happen so often, I think that will happen at some point, unless there is a trade. You know, unless he has a really hot week in Scranton and Brian Cashman gets some phone calls and he unloads when he can. But I think he's going to be the subject of a lot of phone calls between general managers.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel bad for Wade because he's a nice kid and he played his ass off in spring, won a job out of spring, and had a chance. And he has not been able to put it together.
Don't feel bad for him because he's going to get a better opportunity somewhere else.
I mean, it's all relative. He's still a professional baseball player.
Yeah, so. But I'm saying if I'm Tyler Wade at this point in where I'm looking at my career and looking forward at what's happening on the Yankees right now, if I want to be the best baseball player I can be and the best major leaguer I can be, for me to have, you know, not just a glass ceiling, I need to get traded and I need to go somewhere where there's actual opportunity to play in the field at a full-time spot. Because I think if he were to get full-time at bats, I think he would be a better player.
We said that though, and he kind of got full-time at bats in the first
kinda,
2 weeks of the
but
season.
Didn't, but kind of, I don't know. He was still wishy-washy with his role.
And it was also 30 degrees half the game. So
yeah, it was a bad stretch.
What's the final question?
Last one is from Tim Sinette at Tim Sinette on Twitter. How common is it for a manager to not wear a jersey during the game? Here's a picture of Boone in the sixth inning on Friday. You can't see it, but I can see it. He says, yeah, sometimes managers are seen wearing hoodies or jackets in cooler weather, but Boone just had a t-shirt over a thermal. What are your thoughts? And I actually tweeted about this because I noticed it as well.
Yes, and I Googled because I know it's not, obviously it's not a rule that the managers have to wear a jersey because Boone would have been in trouble for that. But I was just kind of wondering why some guys do it, some guys don't. And I actually Googled and I got a little history lesson. So back in the day, managers used to be called captains and they would sometimes play, which is why they had a traditional uniform and number.
You said back in the day, like what are we talking here?
Like the
1895?
Yeah, exactly. 1895. And then as baseball evolved and it got into the modern era, managers were just that. They managed the roster, they managed the player changes, all that kind of stuff. They no longer played, but some of them, many of them, still adopted the tradition of wearing a uniform with a number because Boone is assigned a number, mm-hmm. but sometimes he wears it. I know he wore it on opening day, but normally he's just in the warm-up suit there.
It's pretty funny if you think about it in a different way, like take your mind off of what you already know from baseball. Think about sports. Is there any other manager or coach, head coach in any other sport that wears the uniform? No, nowhere. Look at football. They don't ever wear the uniform. Hockey. Hell no. They don't wear the uniform. They wear a suit. Basketball suit. Like this is a very abnormal thing for the guy who's in charge to wear the same uniform as the players. It's not something that is done across other sports, but we're so used to it. And so used to seeing it. I'm used to seeing the jacket or the uniform. And that's why I tweeted about when I saw him walking out. I'm like, what is this, spring training? This is weird. Why are you wearing a t-shirt? And it just caught me off guard. It was an odd thing to see. But I mean, yeah, I mean, he could do whatever he wants to do. There's no rule against it. So,
well,
this
is it
not what we're used to?
Is it more stupid for a coach or a manager to be wearing a suit like in hockey or basketball, or to be wearing a uniform like in baseball?
I don't know, because at this point I think it would absolutely look ridiculous if I saw a hockey coach wearing like a jersey.
Well, if they were wearing full pads and skates, yeah, it would be ridiculous.
No, just the jersey would look stupid. if I saw a football coach on the sideline wearing a jersey, come on, like that would look absolutely ridiculous at this point. We're so used to seeing things that it's, you know, our heads are trained a certain way at this point.
You remember when Jack Del Rio would just wear the leather jacket with the slick back hair?
See, that was legit. I like that because Tomlin did that too. I think Tomlin on the Steelers would do that as well. But
no, he wears like the old Letterman jacket.
You're right. It didn't have the leather, but he would wear the jacket with the sunglasses. Like he had kind of an old school 70s look. And, you know, they have a little bit more flexibility. Boone's
so
just going outside the box.
What should baseball managers wear? Because they would look utterly ridiculous in suits.
I totally agree. No, I have no problem. It's like the football. It's like the football coach. The football coach wears
whatever
paraphernalia of the team, but doesn't wear the uniform. And I'm good with that. I'm fine with whatever he wants to do, honestly. I really don't give a shit. It was just odd to me because I saw it. It stood out in my mind. I'm like, this looks different. Why is it different? Oh, he's wearing a shirt, not a hoodie or a jacket. Not even a hoodie, but a jacket or the uniform. So
Girardi always wore his uniform.
Yes, he did. But he's like a military, yes, you know, button up. He probably had his suit, his uniform dry cleaned every day too.
Yep. And you know, like he was very always just wanted to get in the game. Like he was so close to just putting himself in the game half the time.
I mean, he had it dry cleaned. He had it pressed, laid out in plastic every day. Like that thing was ready to go with his regimented breakfast in the same place on the same hangar, you know, brought to him by the same guy. Like there were a lot of things like that. Aaron Boone in the picture that we're looking at is blowing a bubble, not giving a shit, wearing a t-shirt that says Yankees on it and just, you know, doing what Aaron Boone does because he's never managed a game in his life and he kind of looks like it.
What would you wear?
I'd probably wear the uniform under something.
But what about when on a July day it gets to be 95 degrees in the middle of July? You don't want to wear layers.
Yeah, so I may, I don't know. Maybe I would. I would probably wear the uniform because that's what I know. I don't know. I'm a traditionalist in the sense of, you know, I like doing what I've seen and what I know, and that's what I know. But I don't have a problem with anybody who does something different.
I would whatever is like whatever streaking at that point. Like I don't know. Maybe Boone has been wearing this exact same T-shirt for the last 7 games, which is why they're on a win streak.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe hopefully they're still on a win streak.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't know. I just don't have a problem with it. If anybody has a problem with it, they should really, you know, take a look in the mirror and readjust their issues.
All right, guys, thank you for submitting the mailbag questions. To do so, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can tweet us at Yankees Podcast, and you can also join the Facebook group by searching the Bronx Pinstripe Show in Facebook. We're up near 1,000 members there, so definitely get in there. A lot of good in-game action and just... everyone's always posting something funny in there. Also, call the voicemail line. We're not doing voicemails this week, but hopefully next week there'll be a good batch. Call it up, 646-480-0342, and we'll talk to you guys on Thursday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.